Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Josh Hallam, and you are listening to Just Films and That. This is the podcast where we talk about films that we think are underrated, underseen, or we just wanted to talk about them. This week, it's a classic film that we're going to be talking about. It's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So, let's see what you reckon. So before we start, I should just say I've got a little bit of a sore throat, so apologies for my voice, but no one's here to listen to me anyway. We're all here to listen to Alice, because she's picked this week's film.
It's all about Alice, just like I always hoped.
It's all about you, Alice. Mm-hmm. Now, every now and then we cover a classic film.
We do indeed.
We've done others. We'll do more.
We have. And Gentlemen for Blondes,
yeah,
The Great Dictator, Vertigo, Saturday Night Fever, quite a list.
Oh, and we're adding to that list today.
Indeed.
Alice, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid then, what's it about and why did you pick it for a classic film?
So, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is a Western from 1969 starring Paul Newman and Robert Redford as the titular characters. And it is apparently loosely based on real events. Mm. It is essentially about cowboys in Wyoming in 1899 and all the hijinks they get up to, but also the challenges they face as cowboys. Like, what if a gang of federal agents on horseback relentlessly chase you down? Well, you move to Bolivia.
We've all been there.
So that's just kind of what it is. In a nutshell, we just follow these guys on their cowboying adventures. Why did I pick it? So I wanted to do a classic. This one I've been thinking of for a long time. So this is a film that my husband has been trying to get me to watch for ages. So you could almost say it's a classic and also a listener suggestion at the same time. I don't know how much he listens, but I know he's definitely heard at least one episode. He would talk about it like it was one of his favourite films. Mm. And I was like, right, well, I need to see what the fuss is all about. And like you say, we're here to determine why people regard it as a classic.
Yep.
And see if its influence has stood the test of time and if it's, you know, sort of absorbed through the ages and if we can still see its influences today, which is usually how we measure if something's a classic.
It is. It's a difficult thing to quantify. Mm. And we always preface this with, who the fuck are we to decide if it is or isn't a classic?
We're just two guys with a podcast.
We're just sort of talking about it and deciding if we think it's deserving of its status. But so it was one of Mr. Oliver's favorite films. Have you subjected him to either Speed 2 Cruise Control or Grease 2 Cruise Control?
So I'm pretty sure he did watch Speed 2 with me. Yeah.
He's a good man.
He's a better man than me. He's got a lot of patience, that fella. Don't think he watched Grease 2 with me, though. There was no way that
was going to
happen.
He's not that good a man. No one is.
Had you seen this one before, Josh?
I hadn't seen before, but I'll tell you this much. It was also on my list of classics.
No, it wasn't. Are you serious?
It's one I've always wanted to watch. I've heard it talked about a lot in the terms of the effect it had and stuff like that. And the other thing, which is interesting, which you touched on slightly there, is I don't think if we haven't done many Westerns, have we even done a Western?
We've
done over 100 episodes,
question.
I'm not too sure, but I can't think. I suppose there have been other films that feel quite Western-y. You know, if you think of like even something a little bit like Young Adam felt very Western-y, and there's been other ones as well.
Interesting analysis, but, George.
Yeah.
And hey, you know, Rat Race, I think, was in the desert.
Yeah, Rat Race
lot.
Is in the desert.
In Saturday Night Fever, it's kind of like they're cowboys wrangling the ladies.
Yeah, I guess so. Cowboys wrangling ladies.
There we go. We're making the connections.
We are, yeah. So I had been on my list as one of the classics I wanted to cover, so I was excited to watch this. I was really glad you picked it, because I've been looking for an excuse to watch it, apart from the fact that I could just watch it in my own free time, because I'm an adult with free will. So let's get stuck in then. So first of all, did you watch it with your husband?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And do you find, I'm always interested in that sort of thing, do you find that, so I like to watch films with my partner, and she always laughs at me because I'll like say, oh, this bit, they did this, or did you know about this bit? To the point where she'll be like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I'm trying to watch this.
Yeah. sometimes she says it does help, but sometimes not. Mainly for watching stuff that's like from a connected universe, like Marvel or Star Wars or something. She'll be like, who's that? And I'll be like, it's this person.
Well, yes, he was very helpful for me when we were watching Green Lantern. Very helpful.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, well, let me tell you about the Green Lanterns and all the different lanterns there are. So then I got like a crash course. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Literally, he's the biggest nerd of all.
So you watched it with him. Did you find that enriched it for you then?
I suppose a little bit, because he would sort of draw attention to certain things. And I think he was noticing things that he himself hadn't seen the first time around. So he'd say like, oh, it's really interesting how they've shot that. Or it's like, oh, that's actually a really funny piece of dialogue for the time.
I find that it can go one of two ways. Either it's like, it's a lovely shared experience, or there's like pressure.
It depends. You know what? It totally depends what we're watching. Because sometimes I just need him to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, there are some things that I want to watch. I do not need your running commentary alongside it. But with something like this, I was happy to hear what you had to say. Especially as there's quite a lot of silences in it.
There's quite a lot of elongated silences, I thought. And I suppose not pressure, because we've both been with our respective other halves for ages.
A while,
so it's not like we're going to split up if I don't like, you know.
You ruined this film
But there is like an element of like, I want to like it because like, it'd make them happy sort of thing. Like one of my partner's favourite films is Napoleon Dynamite, right? And she knows this, and she listens to it, so... I fucking hate Napoleon Dynamite. I just can't get into it. But like another one she loves is Little Miss Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And when we watched that together, I adored it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I love Little Miss Sunshine. But anyway, so all that aside, what did you like about the film?
So it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think I was expecting that at all, really.
Well, before you start, I want to pick your brains on this because I know my answer. Was it what you expected?
Oh, I mean, I think so. I don't think I was expecting it to be as funny as it was. I thought it would take much more of a serious stance. But I suppose, it was cowboys. It was horses. It was, it was robberies. It was kind of all the things I was expecting.
It was not what I was expecting.
Oh, really? What did you think it was going to be?
Yeah, a sci-fi. I was like, where's all the
where's
laser
swords? Where's the spaceships? Yeah. That's cowboys versus aliens, Josh. That's a different film.
there was a lot of elements in it that was what I was expecting. But I suppose, and I'll come on to this, the structure wasn't what I was expecting, because it's almost like a little scene, a little series of vignettes or sketches in places. There's a lot of short scenes that just are bits of dialogue, and then it moves on, and there's, almost like a series of vignettes. But anyway, as you were saying, was it what you expected, and what did you like about it?
Yeah, so it was pretty funny in a way that I just wasn't expecting. So I think it does boast a really engaging and witty script with some great one-liners from the cowboys. And some of the funniest moments I found were between the cowboys and the people they were robbing, which reminded me a little bit of Ned Kelly. So I wonder, are we seeing the influences there? You know, is it crossed over down to Australia?
Maybe. I mean, this film is very influential when you read about it, so it's... Maybe it did influence something like Ned Kelly. I mean, that's like, 40 years later or whatever. So it's definitely must have done, right? Like something.
They're both based
on real guys as well.
Yeah. Really sort of out in the open, sparse landscapes. Yeah. People just trying to make it in any way they can.
Yeah.
It was shot in a really interesting way, I thought, aiding in building the tension in certain areas, which was then broken by these moments of comedy. The camera is doing some really interesting things, like the way it moves and follows the action. Yeah. Obviously, we're on horseback a lot of the time in these really dramatic and beautiful locations. There's a lot of zooming in, there's pull focuses, and it all just felt quite impressive for the time. I think I say impressive for the time and stuff. It felt older than 1969.
I thought
I thought I was watching something almost maybe from like the 40s. I don't know what it was about it, but it felt older to me.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean, especially because as soon as it starts, I don't know where you watched it, but where I watched it, you got the really old 20th Century Fox logo. It felt straight away like this is old.
Oh yeah.
And I think the fact that it feels old, I think that partly is a conscious decision because they do a lot color fading into sepia and black and white and back out again.
So maybe it's
meant to give it like an authentic feel or something.
And I thought there were some quite silent cinema-esque feeling moments.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that we sort of had these long, long moments where there wouldn't be any dialogue. And there was one sequence where they're robbing one of the banks in, it might be the one in Bolivia or it might still be the one in Wyoming, but there's this really long sequence where he's robbing the bank and there's just music playing. There's no dialogue whatsoever. Yeah. And I was like, this feels like a silent, like a silent film.
Big long scene on a bicycle as well.
Oh my God, mate. We'll get to that. We'll get to the bicycle scene. I'm telling you, we'll get to the bicycle scene. And like you just touched on there's some very dramatic, I guess, tones and colouring to some of the shots. A couple of sequences that really stood out for me and almost felt like they were from a different film. So the raindrops keep falling on my head, bicycle sequence. It's certainly something I've seen in The Simpsons. Points there for having like, you know, a cultural influence and, you know, lasting in pop culture. No idea it was from this film.
No, me neither.
It's very odd and it feels completely out of place, but I thought it was really cool at the same time.
Do you think, so that's one of the things I've sort of gotten in my notes about the legacy of the film, is like, was this one of the first films to do something like that? Use a contemporary song in an older setting. You know, the way that like something like, I don't know if you watch it, but the way Peaky Blinders does it
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, and Submarine
you get it's like a set in the 1910s in Peaky Blinders, but it's Radiohead or it's Arctic Monkeys.
Right, okay.
Whereas this is, it's a contemporary song that was written for the film, I think, but it's obviously set in the 1800s or the early 1900s. So I thought that was quite interesting. I had no idea it was from this film either.
Yeah, no idea, but I really enjoyed it. And a lot of Butch's actions on the bike as he's riding around did remind me a lot of Charlie Chaplin, sort of physically.
Again, silent cinema as well.
Yeah, I really felt it. Like, I really felt those influences. That wasn't something that I was expecting at all. And then you've got this photo montage that shows a trip that Butch Cassidy, the Sundance Kid, and then Etta, who's like Butch's the Sundance Kid's love interest, but is kind of almost going out with both of them.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there,
sort of
really.
Feels at times. She's just very close to them both, I think. One is a more, perhaps, an intellectual and a more emotional relationship, and the other one is more physical, more sexual. So they go on this trip to New York, and they use a photo montage. The filmmakers use a photo montage to show this trip. And I just thought that was a really interesting use of a different sort of media, like putting all these photos in it. But I thought it was good. I thought it was clever, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. Again, is that something that, I mean, that's not the first time that's been done, because that, like you say, must go back to silent cinema. But there was something that felt quite contemporary about the way that they did it, it felt like it was new. Do you know what I mean? The way the film was constructed for me felt like it was quite cutting edge for the time, maybe. I'm not too sure. What else did you like?
So I did really like the villain. So the villain essentially is a group of federal agents on horseback bearing down on them, right? So they're this faceless, ominous presence.
Yeah, you never see them.
It sort of reminded me of the Ringwraiths from Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like it really added a lot of drama to it. You know, there are moments where you can hear the horse hooves getting louder, or at nighttime we can see their torches moving across the landscape. And I just thought that was brilliant. Like, you could have so easily, and I think there is like a sheriff and there's, you know, a few sort of old-timey police officers and stuff in there who are like, we've got to catch these guys. But they're not really threatening at all. And I think it could have been so easy to just have a sheriff, you know, not too dissimilar to Robin Hood, I suppose, like the sheriff of Nottingham is being like, oh, he's the bad guy. He's the one you've got to watch out for. The big wolf, right? Dangerous, right? Yeah. So I loved what they did with those agents on horseback.
It's interesting,
I thought it was really clever.
There's three characters in this. There are a few other little supporting characters with the odd line.
Yeah, kind of gang members.
But really, there's Butch, there's Sundance, and there's Etta.
Mm-hmm.
And even Etta's not in it that much.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very much about those two, isn't it? It really is. And I'll tell you one thing I liked. I thought that the lead performances were great. So I thought
they felt
quite old school Hollywood. Now, I know at the time, Robert Redford wasn't a huge star, but Paul Newman was. But now, obviously, everyone knows Robert Redford's a huge star and all that sort of stuff. But so it's almost like the weight of everything he's achieved since this film, I applied to the film and just assumed it was like an Ocean's 11 type, two big stars sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? And I thought it was really great. I thought they were both really likable. I thought they were both really different. And I thought that the chemistry between them, the way they bounced off each other, they bicker like an old married couple and stuff like that. And that, again, that's not what I was expecting. I thought it was, you know, it's going to be cool leading men. And in some ways it is cool leading men, but they're not.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They're not afraid to show like the fact that they're like clever or like even a bit scared in places or a bit vulnerable in places. And I really enjoyed that. Again, I wasn't expecting that side of it. And I thought their performance and their chemistry, you know, with a lesser chemistry or with worse performers, whatever, this film could have been nothing because they got some people who sort of worked together really well. I think it's great. I thought they were really good in it.
Yeah, and they weren't just brutes or anything, were
exactly.
they? And they sort of brought a lot of humanity to it. And I think where it could have been very cartoony, because cowboy, the idea of a cowboy, like, yee-haw! Like, you know, if you've watched sort of any kind of Simpsons, Family Guy, you know, Toy Story, like, it's all very cartoony, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's all very over the top and a bit silly. And with different actors or a different script, you run the risk of doing that. But that just wasn't the case in this, I don't think.
No, they worked together really well.
Mm. Was there anything else that you liked about this? Anything?
Yeah, so something else I wanted to touch on is we'll get on to the legacy in a little bit. But I thought, just to echo what you've said there, the script, I thought it was a lot funnier than I thought. So I started reading about the writer, William Goldman. Now, he has written books, he's written plays, he's written films, and he's produced films, and he's had a hand in a lot of scripts for a lot of massive films. This guy's contribution to pop culture is insane, right?
So really?
Josh,
have you been down a rabbit hole?
I have a little bit,
William
Goldman, right? So he wrote this, and he wrote or had a hand in, not necessarily wrote, but might have been a consultant on Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, Princess Bride, All the President's Men, A Bridge Too Far, Misery, Twins, Chaplin, Last Action Hero, Good Will Hunting, and Maverick.
Wow, what a selection. Maverick as in just now Top
no,
Gun
No, as in
Maverick.
The Mel Gibson cowboy one. From not Top Gun, no. I mean, what again, I don't know what his involvement in all of them. Like obviously, Good Will Hunting is famously written by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. But I think he had some sort of like consultation role or was involved in them. That's what a contribution. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. He's a busy boy.
Yeah. But I just wanted to flag that up because I thought that was really interesting. And again, the script was not what I thought it was going to be, but I really enjoyed that side of it. The legacy of the film we'll come back to when we talk about the critical reception. But, you know, a lot to like in there, I thought. I was quite surprised because I liked it, but not for the reasons I thought I would.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. What an interesting analysis.
So before we move on to dislikes, then, I do have to ask you, is this the handsomest pair of leading men we've had?
Oh.
They're up there. Come on. Those blue eyes.
I don't know. Do you remember a little film called The Road to El Dorado?
Okay. Are these the handsomest leading men
Robin
that are
Hood?
Real? Right. You can't have Tulio and Miguel. You can't have Sexy Fox.
Okay. Well, shouldn't have put Sexy Fox on the table.
Well, are these the handsomest real leading men?
Quite possibly.
They're up there, aren't they?
You know, the fact that they're, you know, very, you know, full of action and, you know, they're a bit brooding, but then they're also quite funny as well. Like, that obviously helps. I just thought Tom Hardy, right? Tom Hardy times two.
True, yeah, two. So double Tom Hardy and Legend.
Best-looking two leading men.
We'll put it out. We'll put it out as a poll. Who is the handsomest pair of leading men? Two Tom Hardys or Robert Redford and Paul Newman in Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid?
Ha-ha. Well, I've got a little question for you then, seeing as we're asking questions. If we were going to film this today, who would you cast in their roles?
Oh, that's a great shout.
Because I was thinking about this when I was watching it because they remind me very much of two people.
Not sure who you're going to say that. So I feel like in this, if you cast anyone but an American, it'd kick off, right?
Yeah.
Because it's so iconic.
You might get some really dodgy American accents if someone British.
Yeah, because like my first thought was Benedict Cumberbatch and Tom Hardy, right? Because of Stuart Alive Backwards, and I really want to see, then I just want to see them do another film together, I guess. So
Tom Hardy did a cowboy-esque thing, didn't he?
The Revenant he did, didn't he, with Leo?
Not that one. There was one with, was like Shia LaBeouf in it or something.
Oh, Lawless.
Lawless.
Yeah, it's a good film. Who would I pick? Ooh. So, you've put me on the spot. I reckon Chris Pine.
Oh, good shout.
As Butch.
Mm-hmm.
Then you want to go slightly younger for the Sundance Kid.
Mm.
So who would I cast as the Sundance Kid? Do you know who I'd cast? And it's just because he's in my mind because it's out at the cinema whilst we're recording this, but the lad who plays Elvis.
Oh.
Austin Butler.
Right, yeah. He looks like people have been raving about
him. So I'd go Chris Pine as Butch. And Austin Butler as the Sundance Kid. But I don't know.
Kid.
There's loads of people who could do it. Because I was also like, it's like Tom Holland as the Sundance Kid. But I think he's a bit young. I think you've got to be like, I reckon Harold Newman in this, like 40. And then
I think the secret would be to be young, but maybe look a little bit weathered. Like you need to look like it's been a hard time of cowboying around.
Yeah,
right?
So
whereas
Tom
Holland is a bit clean.
He is a bit clean, isn't he? You got people in mind then.
So for me, just based on their looks and some of the ways...
Is it Keanu Reeves?
Keanu Reeves. Yeah. We do the special double screen thing and we've got two Keanu Reeves, body double and
double
Alice
Reeves.
Is happy.
No, who would you cast?
For me, For me, it was Matthew McConaughey and Owen Wilson. Like,
that's a good shout, actually. Yeah, that's
looking at those two, I feel like they resemble them a little bit. Well, I guess Owen Wilson. So the Sundance Kid was the blonde one, right?
Yeah.
So Owen Wilson as the kid, you know, maybe young Owen Wilson, and then McConaughey as Butch. And I just feel like, you know, they've got the accents, they've got the look. They do look a bit like those guys.
Yeah, I think you've won there. I think that's the better suggestion than my one. So let's go with that.
McConaughey
and Wilson. Again, we'll put that out to you guys. If we were going to make this again, me and Alice aren't going to make it. We don't have the budget. But if we were, who would you cast? Who's your fantasy choice? Okay, then. So we'll move on to talking about things that we perhaps didn't like about the film. I don't think we're going to have loads, but Alice, suck it to me.
So this isn't really about the film, so I'll just get it out of the way quickly first.
It's about my husband. And what I want to say...
It's about my marriage, Josh. Yeah. I've got to talk to you about something. If he makes me watch another fucking film. Right, so I didn't feel sorry for the horses, right?
Yeah.
So they do not look happy, and it did make me feel a bit uncomfortable. Every time I saw a horse that looked distressed, right? So they had the wide eyes, the frothing mouth, and trying to pull away from people. Now, I know that I am just particularly sensitive when it comes to animals, all right? I know that, and I'm self-aware, and I can't help it. And obviously, it doesn't ruin the film for me, but it just meant that every time the horses came on screen, I was like, oh. And they were on there a lot.
Yeah.
There was a lot of horseplay.
I don't know much about horses and stuff like that. So do you reckon they weren't treated very well by the production? Or do you think it's just a case of...
You know what? They probably treated them as well as you would treat an animal in the 60s the United States of America, right? Which, you know, I don't know if the kind of animal rights stuff and the, you know, no animals were harmed in the making of this film. That probably wasn't around yet.
Maybe not.
It just distressed me a little bit. I hate seeing horses in distress. You know, everyone's always talking about how smart they are and how great they are. But yet we still fucking treat them like absolute garbage and I hate it. But apart from that, some of it was a bit dark visually.
That's on my list as well. I literally couldn't tell what was going on in some
sometimes,
scenes.
Sometimes, right? Yeah. So I do think it was a style choice to maybe highlight the lack of electricity and the fact that they're hiding out from the feds and need to keep a low profile. And, you know, it's all really isolated and it's really basic. That, you know, they're still kind of living in these quite... old-timey wood huts, like tiny wooden shack houses sort of thing. So I don't know if it was just to draw attention to that. But it did mean that there were some scenes where you just couldn't quite see as much. So it was just something that I noticed.
Yeah, I that's one of my... I've only got 2 points, and that's one of them, which is that it was physically a bit dark in places and I couldn't always see what was going on.
Yeah. Do you reckon that was intentional?
It must be, right?
Yeah.
It must be, like... It's not exactly a low budget, you know, indie film where they might not have been able to get lights. Paul Newman was like one of the biggest stars in the world at the time.
Yeah.
So it must be, like you say, to highlight that. It must be to try and make it feel authentic. And it does. But unfortunately, I will sacrifice authentic feel for me to see what's actually going on in a film.
Yeah. So, you know, appreciate that it was a choice, but you're missing facial expressions and you're missing stuff like that, aren't you? Which can be quite important.
Yeah.
The other thing as well is I do feel like there was a slight pacing issue at times. And I do believe this had a lot to do with the amount. Is it? Oh, mate, you and me, man. You and me got to take
aligned.
Over the world. I think it had a lot to do with the amount of silence that's actually in the film. And this is a tricky one because I appreciate and I value if we are harking back to silent cinema and you're trying to, you know, put across this feeling and a certain mood in the film, shall we say. But there would be like these really long silences between characters when we're moving from one location to the next or moving from one plot point to the next. And I do wonder, you know, is this intentional to heighten the realism and the isolation and to maybe just emphasize how quiet it was, you know, because there's not cars running around. I'd hope there's not cars running around everywhere.
It's not Transformers. There's no Optimus Prime. He's not running around.
Different film, Alice. Different film.
Yeah.
You know, not tons of cars driving around. You know, there's no roads really. It's not densely populated, you know. So I wonder again if these are all choices to emphasize how sparse, how isolated they were.
Yeah, maybe. But I think you're right. I was the same. I think there was a few... Because it wasn't the structure I was expecting, because like I said, there's lots of short little scenes. I felt like the pacing was a bit off it was like pick up and drop and pick up and drop. And so in some places, I found myself getting a little bored. Only a little bit, not loads, but just a little bit.
Only a little bit. And I was always, like, I was always excited when they would both come back on screen and then start talking again. Like, I was always interested to hear what they had to say because you're expecting it. You get to a point where you're like, oh, they're going to say something funny now or something poignant. Mm. And they always did. But yeah, on the whole, I did enjoy it.
Okay, then. So let's move on to talking about the critical reception then. Now, this is a classic, so we've not picked it because we're saying it's underseen or underrated or anything like that. But we'll have a look anyway, and then we'll get into, is it deserving of its classic status? Now, I haven't seen the critical reception. I imagine it's probably relatively high. Alice, you have seen it, so...
You're going to guess for me?
Yeah.
Throw a number my way.
It's quite highly rated, isn't it? So I'm going to say it could be like mid-8s.
Okay. Okay, cool. So at the time of recording on IMDb, it got 8
right.
out of 10. Then over on Rotten Tomatoes, it got 89 with the critics and 92% with the audience. So jeez, big old scores there. Probably appropriately rated.
Yep.
Maybe a touch overrated. But
would you say that? Would you say it's a little bit...
So, as far as some of the other classics we've done go, this didn't sort of... It didn't provoke the similar emotional connection that I've had to some of the other films. And I know we come back to this every time we do a classic episode, but saying something like... So Saturday Night Fever, like I had a really strong emotional connection to that. The Great Dictator, I had a very strong emotional connection to that I simply wasn't expecting. Mm. And then something like Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And all those films for me carried a lot of gravitas that I just didn't quite feel from with this one. Mm. You can certainly see the influences in modern pop culture, in Simpsons. You know, that is where I've seen that bicycle scene for sure.
Yeah.
I also believe, and I've never played it, but I believe that this was quite inspirational for the game Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, right. I've not played it myself, but yeah, you can see it's a cowboy game, isn't it? I know that much. You know, it's a game set in the Old West.
I think it's something to do sort of specifically with this time during cowboying.
Right. Yeah. It's like the death of the Old West sort of thing,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like, how are we meant to make money now? Like, what do we do? Yeah. Like they say in the film, right? Do we need to join the army? Like, let's go to Australia and all this. So that's my assessment of it. What about yourself, Josh?
Yeah, so I mean, critical reception aside, does it deserve to be a classic? Well, I enjoyed this more than Saturday Night Fever and Meet Me in St. Louis, but I enjoyed it less than The Great Dictator and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. So middle of the pack there. However, it's like you say, its legacy, I think, is undeniable. The way there's certain things in there, the use of contemporary music with an old setting. I think the way that the leading men are written, the way that they're quipping and bouncing off each other, I think that was probably quite new at the time. I don't know if it was, but I get the impression that they were pushing the boat out a little bit with the way that they were quipping off each other and the way they had two men in the lead, you know, with chemistry, who weren't, you know, they're masculine, but they're not the height of masculine, you know, they're not John Wayne. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Butch isn't afraid to admit that he's never shot anyone before and that sort of thing. So I thought that was quite interesting. And the way that they're anti-heroes, you know, their actions aren't great, but you still love them, the lovable rogue type character. So I think that, and, you know, the things like the ending, running out into the freeze frame, I think that's pretty well known.
The freeze frame, we've seen that.
I think it's definitely deserving of being a classic, yeah. So I'd say, yes, it is deserving of being a classic.
Well, there we have it, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, a classic. Maybe not as monumental as some of the other films we've done, but you can certainly see its influences have lasted through the decades. So, Josh, tell us, what are we going to be watching next week?
In a slight shift in tone, next week we are going to be watching and talking about Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo.
From 2002, that one.
From 2002. So,
indeed. And we will say no more on the matter. Yes, so join us next week for when we will be talking about Scooby-Doo. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. If you've liked it, if you listen to other episodes, if you give us a little review or rating on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. It's very, very much appreciated. It helps other people find us and hear what we think about Butch Cassidy or what we'll think about Scooby-Doo, etc. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. And you can find us on all the social medias if you search for Just Films and That. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And we're also on the television, aren't we, Alice?
We are indeed. We are on the local TV network every Friday from 6 p.m. Now at the new time, new length of 3 minutes.
Extended
guys, they gave us another minute to talk about films. More fool them, I say. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, Liverpool or the northeast of England, you can find us on Channel 7 on Freeview. Or if you live in North Wales or South Wales, you can find us on Channel 8 on Freeview. We're also on Channel 195 on Sky. That's every Friday from 6 p.m. on the local TV network.
Yes, lots of ways to see us, lots of ways to get in touch. Please get in touch, suggest films that you want us to cover. We're always open to your suggestions. Until next week, thank you very much for listening, and it's a goodbye from me. Cheerio!
Bye!
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.